and welcome to another episode of our In the Paddock interview series. In this episode, we have with us Dave Wallingford. Dave, or Savage Dave as he's come to be known, has been competing in the national championship for the last couple of years, finishing an impressive second place in the American Rally Association two-wheel drive class. Next year, he is upping his game with an exciting announcement of driving an M-Sport-built Fiesta R5. Grab a beer with us as we sit down, chat with Dave about the new car, his plans for 2018, and where the name Savage Dave came from. This is In the Paddock from openpaddock.net. Well, hello and welcome to our humble little podcast. Coming at you from the West Coast, I'm your host, Mike Shaw, and with me as always, my co-presenter and one of the great state of Minnesota's treasures, Ian Holmes.
Oh boy, you're putting me up. You're putting me up there with Garrison Keillor and Jesse the Body Ventura, aren't you?
Hey, you know, you're a professional co-driver. That rate's pretty high, right?
What will you come up with next time, I wonder?
Yeah, gotta always, you know, play it up a little bit. You doing well this evening, Ian?
I'm doing wonderful, yes, yeah.
Okay, well, without further ado, we have, of course, on the line with us, Savage Dave Wallingford. Dave, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
You know, it was a long day at the office, almost didn't get out of there. Go figure, me doing IT stuff is like, you know, at the end of the day, you have to do some change or whatever when nobody else is on the computers, right?
Of course,
What did I do? I broke something. And so that ended up being there a little late, but you know.
Oh, this time was the IT person's fault.
Yep. And yes, I turned it off and back on again. All right, let's kick this off. I know everybody wants to know about the R5, but let's kind of start from the beginning, because when we were doing some of the interviews we did with ARA, me and Matt, you said something interesting about how you got involved in rallying. If I recall, you said something like you hadn't even experienced driving a stick shift before you got started?
That's right, yeah. So I guess it was a little over 2 years ago now. Before that, I had always owned relatively boring cars, SUVs. I had my first car as a minivan, and then I kind of upped the game and bought myself a Tesla, something really fast and exciting. And my brother Jim says, Dave, you've never owned a car that fast. Maybe you should learn how to drive it. And so in the process of looking for driving schools, of course, I came across Team O'Neill. I said, well, that sounds fun. Went up there, and the first thing they had to teach me how to do was drive stick. First 5 minutes of the week, and then by the end of the day, I was totally hooked.
Well, that's just awesome. I mean, you know, so many of us start out learning on a stick, and to have somebody come over to the dark side, that's awesome. That's awesome. It's a lot of fun, and now you're like, anytime you're in an automatic, you're like, so disappointed, right?
Yeah, so boring, yeah. Yeah, well, I grew up in the city, and I never had any reason to learn how to drive a stick. So, but now I can't imagine life without it.
And that was how long ago that you first got that experience?
I guess that would have been June of 2015, so a little over 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, and then my first rally was Snowdrift, January of 2016.
So you just figure out how to learn on how to drive on this stuff, and then you go to the slipperiest roads ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the very first day of testing was my first rally. First day of testing at Snowdrift was my first day with my co-driver, Leanne Janilla. And I was just the first run at testing. I think I just scared the crap out of her. I was like, well, I just learned how to drive stick, and now here we are. And so I end up just bouncing off of every single snowbank I could on that test. But I picked up pretty quickly after that, I guess, because...
You're still together now, too. So, I mean, yeah. Obviously she saw your potential as well, right? So.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so.
So you've kept at it for like 2 years. So what is it you like best about rallying in comparison to other motorsports?
Well, it's actually the only motorsport I've really experienced. Actually, before rally school, I wasn't even interested in motorsports. I really just went up to have a fun vacation and pick up some driving skills, go home and never think about motorsports again. That didn't work out that way, but
no, it didn't.
But I guess what really appeals to me about rally is the kind of individual challenge. You're not out there on a track directly competing with other people. You're kind of competing with yourself when you're on the stage. You don't have that immediate feedback of how fast another competitor is going when you're on stage.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one of those things where you're not side by side with people. You can really just kind of compare your own times and do kind of a lot of self-improvement, right?
Yeah, and that's what, and I really enjoyed that, but it also makes it difficult to become competitive too, because then you have to start looking at times and you can't directly compare how you're approaching one corner versus somebody else.
Yeah, so you have experienced a whole lot in a very short amount of time. Has that been kind of just overwhelming, or do you normally like to push yourself like this?
No, I think usually if I'm getting into something, I jump straight in. and the best way that I've found to get more experience and get better at rally is just to do more of it. So I've really taken every opportunity I can to get in the car.
Well, you've obviously been out there a lot, doing multiple series, and both across the border to the north and all across the country. Has this constant push, is that something where that Savage Dave came from? I mean, where did that all start? I'm sure everybody wants to know.
Well, my very first gravel rally was 100 Acre Wood last year, which I ended up winning first in class, but the I think it was the fourth stage of the rally, I ended up breaking the shifter. I'm just snapping it right in half pretty much. And we called back to the crew, and Jared Ainsworth, one of our crew guys, heard about it. And apparently his reaction was, "Oh, effing savage." And it kind of stuck.
That's awesome. So, you know, in the course of all these rallies you've done, I've recalled you competing, you know, several times here out in the West. One of the ones that really stands out, you know, as you've been learning, you've also made some mistakes here and there. But of course, that's part of it, right? Yes. And most of our listeners probably remember this year you had your crash at Mount Washington, which was nicely captured on film. But
I couldn't have picked a better spot to do
yeah,
that.
Right? Right in front of everybody. but I recall a bit scarier incident at Olympus last year. For those that don't recall, can you tell us what happened there and what was going through your mind at that moment?
So it was early in the rally, maybe the third stage or so, at Olympus. And this was my first experience with writing notes. My first experience probably the first time, racing with a little bit of rain and moisture on the road. But ended up coming to this intersection. It's a deceptive interception. I don't brake soon enough. I lock up the brakes, go full lock with the steering, and just go straight into what I thought was going to be some weeds, and I was going to hit bump a little tree or something, just back straight out. Would have been any big deal. But behind all those weeds was this 8-foot deep culvert that was not at all visible from the road. So I ended up scrubbing off most of the speed. So we start going through the weeds, and all of a sudden, kind of slowly, the nose starts tipping down into the weeds, and we end up very slowly rolling over and falling 8 feet down into this culvert. Much to our surprise, ended up with my head underwater, which was, as you can probably imagine, pretty frightening there for a few seconds. Managed to get out pretty quickly.
That must have been just kind of scary. I mean, here you are, it's like, okay, we're going to be upside down. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard to get out because, I mean, with the Hans and all that stuff, it's not easy to get out of your seat, is it?
Right, no, and I'm up there upside, or down there upside down. And There's a pretty good video on my Facebook page about it. But what you can't see under the deep water is that, or the dark water, is that there's kind of a V in the roll cage right where my helmet is. So my head is kind of stuck up in that, and I'm struggling with that and trying to lift myself up while taking my helmet off at the same time. And, you know, hindsight, I probably could have gotten out of there with the helmet on and everything, but... I guess at the moment, at the water's rising up, and at the time, it felt like that my helmet was what was keeping me from getting out of the car.
Wow, definitely scary. But you know, on the bright side of that, I mean, you obviously got out okay. You and Leanne both got out. You got out pretty quickly. But the car's pretty waterlogged at that point. But yes, I recall that car ended up, you know, the sweeps picked it up, took it back to the Team O'Neill crew. And they did like a full, like, for those that haven't seen it, M Sport Titanic, if you ever YouTube that, they went into a lake with a car in Mexico. And in a similar way, the crew just started disassembling that whole car and getting it cleaned up. I mean, this thing was underwater. The nose of it was underwater, right?
Yeah. Luckily, not much of the engine was really very deep under the water. It was mostly the roof, but... what was underwater was filled with just like this thick, swampy sludge that if you stick your nose in the right spot in that car, I'm sure you could still smell it. But yeah, so luckily for me, I think Team O'Neill was supporting four cars, including me, at that rally. So there were, you know, 8+ crew members there, and they just ripped at it all night long and got it back ready to go for the next day. And that was probably the very best outcome for me, was that I was able to get back in the car the very next day and continue to rally. So I didn't have any time for that wreck to, you know, run around in my head.
And, yeah. I mean, that was going to be kind of my next question is, you know, what is that like, you know, after such an incident getting back in? But I guess that is the best strategy, isn't it?
Yeah. I just didn't really have time to reflect on it.
Yeah, so aside from that, it's like, what did you think when you go there the next morning and you find out that the car's ready to go again? I mean, the effort that these guys put in overnight, I mean, that sounds truly, truly incredible. And it's like, I'm sure you probably thought that maybe that was your weekend was done. And then you find out a few hours later, you've got a car to race again.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of anticipation. We waited, I can't remember, maybe 4 hours at service waiting for the car to get back. And then as soon as it got back, they jumped right on it. And within, 30, 45 minutes, they had the motor fired up. And at that point, we knew that we could run the next day again if we wanted. And of course, we were totally on board with that.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's just awesome. Great job by the whole crew. I mean, obviously, they're extremely dedicated. That was the regular Fiesta R2, normally aspirated 1.6 liter, right? And this year you went to the R2T, right?
Yeah.
So what was that transition like, going from the normally aspirated to the turbo car? Is most of the setup kind of the same because they're both R2s, it's just more power or what?
Yeah, the chassis is exactly the same. So that felt the same. The big difference was the turbo, and it has a wider power band. The difficult thing with the naturally aspirated R2 is that it has a really narrow, really high power band, and it takes a lot of work to keep the car in that power band. With the turbo, it's much wider. It's just easier to drive, and it's a lot easier to drive smoothly than the naturally aspirated version.
That makes sense for sure. Now about the R5. I mean, so, you know, as we were leaving Ojibwe, I remember seeing you looking at a laptop, looking at liveries for an R5. And like, is he dreaming? No, apparently not. Dreams that become a reality. Yeah. So, Ian, I think you had a question here about how does one get an R5?
You went from the R2 to the R2T, and so now you're going to the R5. I mean, first things first. I mean, what prompted the step up to an R5 car?
Well, I was interested in moving to an all-wheel drive car, and my experience with M Sports and the Fiestas really made that feel like the next natural step. It's still a familiar platform for me, so it's in some ways it's not a huge change. In other ways, it is a completely different world.
I'm sure it is. So how do you actually go about getting an M Sport Fiesta for an R5? I mean you probably don't just get, it's not like you ring up Malcolm Wilson and say, "Hi Malcolm, can I have an R5 Fiesta?" It's what is that?
No, actually, the difference in the US is that you call up Chris Sear at Team O'Neill Motorsports and say, "Chris, I'd like to have an R5. Can you get one for me?" But seriously, I mean, that's Chris Sear in particular at Team O'Neill, along with Pascal Belperrin, crew chief, have really spearheaded this and gotten it all worked out and legal. There's all kinds of legal issues, but they're getting them worked out.
So cool. in getting this purchase process, you actually went to M Sport in Dovenby Hall there in England. What was that experience like?
That was amazing. I had there's no question that rally is bigger over there than it is in North America, but that is quite an operation they have over there. There are hundreds of employees there. They crank out an R5 every single week in there. And the first time I went over, they were, it was the week before Germany. And so they were reprepping something like 20 cars in there all at the same time. And when they reprep a car, they bring it in, they strip the whole thing down, they send the turbo off to the turbo department, the dampers off to the damper department, and it's just an amazing operation.
But one thing we've seen about M Sport, and we saw it in the in their big Ogier announcement last Christmas, they have a collection of the old WRC event winning cars there. Did you get to see any of that stuff?
Yeah, I did. They have a it's what seems to be a fairly small collection compared to what their history, but there are about half a dozen cars in this building, and what seems to be every driving suit that they've ever ran, and it is the coolest rally museum that I've seen.
So actually, that kind of, so you obviously follow the WRC and all that stuff now, because like you said, your first introduction to rally was, you know, just such a short time ago, learning to drive a stick shift, you know, learning how to drive in gravel, and now you're going to M Sport, and, you know, for those of us that have been following a lot longer, this is like, you know, one of those meccas that we'd want to go visit. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is that experience for someone like you, that it's a little bit newer to, you've been following the WRC pretty closely now ever since you got, you know, headlong into the sport?
Yeah, certainly for the past year or so, I've been following the WRC. So it's, I certainly don't have the, you know, I haven't been following it for years and years, don't have the same history with it. But, you know, I still have, you know, obviously a huge passion for the sport, and it all, you know, it was kind of overwhelming for me.
Awesome. Awesome. It's on my bucket list, I tell you that.
Yeah, I, 10 out of 10 would recommend.
So I was looking at some of the videos that you posted on your Facebook page the other day, and they, it really looks like they have quite the space age sort of facility there as well, with some of the things they seem to be doing. There was one thing that it looked like they had satellite dishes like lined up on the back where the back wheels of the cars would be. Were you kind of like amazed at what they were doing in the construction of your car?
Yeah, I'm used to, you know, when you know, the usual, you know, rally alignment system being, you know, a couple of sticks of aluminum with some fishing line and a measuring stick to, you know, get the alignment right. But this was a pretty high-tech alignment system that could tell, you know, within a hundredth of a degree which way the wheel was pointed. And
So you obviously got a chance to test the R5 there while you were visiting. They've got, I guess, a little test track there. I'm guessing you got to, was it just on tarmac you got to test it, or a little bit of gravel, or what?
It's like loose tarmac, kind of. It's some old tarmac that's at an airfield about half an hour away from M Sport.
And what was that first experience? I mean, you got to strap on an R5, right? I mean, it kind of molds around you, right?
Yeah, that's actually about a month ago, I got to go over and test drive their kind of marketing R5. That's, you know, still, it was one of the very first R5s they built. So I got to test drive that, and that was impressively fast. But then I got to test drive mine, and it is mind bendingly quick. It was just, it shuffled my brain. And I'm going to have to continue shuffling my brain to get myself wrapped around that car.
It's an amazing tale that you've got to tell, really, right from Team O'Neill to like a WRC quality car in 2 years. It's have you ever stopped to think about what you're doing? Caught your breath.
Well, I'm afraid if I do, then I'll start to question what I'm doing.
Love that.
But these past couple of years, the whole time, just pushing forward to what's next and what I can be working on, and I think I've gotten past the big things I need to work on, and now I just have a really, really long list of small things that I need to improve, in addition to learning how to drive a blazingly fast car.
So we'll get back to the Fiesta in a little bit, I'm sure. But being the Brit that I am, I know that there is a town called Wallingford in England. It's near Oxford, which is kind of like a bit of a hotbed of English car construction. Is there any English lineage in your family at all?
I've heard all kinds of stories about my name. But I think the real answer is nobody really knows. We're pretty sure I have some English heritage, but yeah, I have no idea.
Because Oxford is like, it's the home to MG, and there's a big there's a huge Mini factory down where they make the BMW Minis down there. So yeah, okay. It's like.
Maybe it is in my blood. So
yeah, maybe there you go.
There you go. With that R5, I guess one of the things I was wondering, and you probably won't really know this until you have it out on the stages, but you know, in comparison, going from an R2 chassis to an R5 chassis, not only is it four-wheel drive, I'm guessing from a setup standpoint, you have only so many things you can adjust, right? In an R2. It's somewhat intentionally made somewhat simply, make it easier, I believe, for the younger drivers that tend to drive them.
Right.
As well as, you know, but have some adjustability. Mm-hmm. When you get to something like an R5, you've got every option, right? And I'm guessing, I mean, everything from the way the differential center diff versus the front diff and the rear diff to, I'm guessing from the suspension, there's probably even more adjustments that can be done there than in an R2, right?
Yeah, there's at least three on each corner, and there's, you know, a dozen different sway bars you can try.
Oh, my.
That's, yeah.
So is your mind a little bit swimming in how you're going to approach, you know, using this car out on the stages? Do you have kind of a base that you know even to start from, or?
Well, one of the many things I really like about driving M Sport cars is that a lot of that they already have figured out for you. And they've spent, millions of dollars on R&D for these cars, so that, you know, when I take delivery of the car, I don't have to figure that stuff out. In addition to that, they have, baseline suspension setup settings that are a great place to start with. And probably most of their customers start there and don't vary too much from it. So, M Sport really does a great job of setting up their their drivers well with baseline settings. So thankfully, I won't have to worry about that for very long. I'll just have to get used to the speed to begin with.
Yeah, so is that going to kind of be the focus? So start with those base settings, a base, let's say, wet gravel setup, a base dry gravel setup, whatever, and then just kind of get used to, you get used to the car before you get the car set for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, my other question is going to be is, you're going to M Sport, you're buying an R5, do you at least get to meet Malcolm Wilson or Richard Milner?
We had the first trip over there, we had a couple of meetings with Rich, and had a good chat with him when I went to go pick it up. I don't think Malcolm was there though, but I did get a couple of R5 stickers out of the deal, so I'm pretty happy with the swag.
Hey, take any swag you can, any swag you
can. That's right.
So the important thing then, well, when you get it, whenever you get it, I assume the car is still in Dovenby, is it? Or is it on a boat on its way here now?
Hopefully it's on a boat.
So the important thing when it gets here is going to be like getting mileage in it. So do you have any plan? What are your plans for testing it and competing in it?
Well, the current plan, which hopefully still happens, there's some, because of the hurricanes, there has been some mix up with shipping and boats and things on the Atlantic, of course. But hopefully the plan is to get 2 to 3 days of training on it at Team O'Neill, which is a great place for me to start as a driver, because I know the roads there very well. And it's obviously home base for Team O'Neill Motorsports, and Pascal, the crew chief, and it's comfortable working there. It's home base. And then our first shakedown event will be the Tri-State Rally, ARA's new regional rally, and just outside of Vegas, I believe.
Yeah, actually, that's that one's actually a little ways away from Vegas. It's it's the reason why they call it Tri-State is because it's near Four Corners, which is between Utah, Arizona, and Colorado, I think are the three states that it's got. I think they skip over New Mexico or something. It's pretty crazy, but it's a beautiful area, though. Amazing looking roads out there, and I'd like to make it down there, but not sure if I'm going to. Still trying to see if I can make that happen. But that it would definitely be cool. Fun to see that, especially see this car out there. But that'll be your shakedown for it then. First test of that car, huh?
Yes, and then we're gonna try to find some roads without snow on them. Do a bunch of testing in December, January, and February, and then first big event next year will be down in Mexico.
Okay. Well, Nemadji in Minnesota, that didn't have snow on it last year, and that was in December.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's certainly been the trend around here too.
Mm-hmm.
We like to ask some little bit lighter questions around here. With all the rallies that you've competed so far, what's your favorite rally that you've been to? You could even include WRC Mexico in that one.
I really enjoyed Oregon both times I've competed there. It's a beautiful area. It's got a great mix of stages. I really enjoy good super special stages. I know a lot of drivers don't, but I mean, for me, it's an opportunity to have fun and get in front of some people and get some spectators involved. And the stages at PIR are a blast for me. And then the tarmac leg is a nice change of surface. And there's just one stage, I can't remember. It basically goes up and over a mountain.
Dalles Mountain Road. We called it Columbia Hills.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's a fantastic stage.
Yes, that is. And by the way, to listeners, I did not pay him to say that. That is my home rally. Big supporter of it. But yes, you know, as far as vistas and views go, it's hard to beat for sure. Means the stages are pretty, a little more open, a little less technical in some places.
Yeah.
But it sure is gorgeous stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And there, speaking of open, there are a few corners on at that rally where I wish we did have more trees, because you just can't see the road where it turns. You don't have the tree line to gauge where you're at, where the corner is. Like maybe we'll go out and plant a tree there next year.
There we go.
Well, I guess that's probably covered the favorite stage question, hasn't it? Sounds like you're pretty enamored of that stage
there. Yeah.
You've got to come out here sometime, Ian. That stage is pretty epic. When you start at the base of it, you're maybe 50 feet off the Columbia Gorge base, where the river is. And then you climb all the way up to the top of the ridge line and then dive back down again on the other side towards that small town. It's just, it's an epic stage. It's hard to describe unless you're there.
Yeah. And at the top of the mountain, there's one point where there are two mounds, I think Mount Hood and I can't remember the other one that's near there. That are like both within eyesight. And every time on Recce, I have to remind myself not to stare in awe at the two gorgeous snow covered mountains that are in view.
You're going to see Mount Hood from there. You'll see Mount Adams to the north, and you'll see just to the west of that, Mount St. Helens, what's left of it. If the clouds aren't there. But yeah, you'll see quite a bit of our Cascade Range. And then if it's a really clear day, you can see even farther to Mount Rainier. Up to the north there and all that stuff. So yeah, plenty of cool big mountains to see out here.
Surely it's okay to stare in awe on Recce. It's when you're on stage that you don't want to stare in awe.
Yeah, that's right. But I hope that the gorge is still as beautiful as it has been in the past after the fires this year. That's
It's really been pretty scary. Unfortunate. Yeah. I actually have some close friends that live in an area of the gorge, in one of the smaller communities along there. They had to evacuate. Thankfully, none of their area ended up burning and they got back home. But what you'll probably notice is a lot of the trees actually are still there, but just brown. So it burned so fast. A lot of it was underbrush that burned, but it killed the trees in the process. So you'll probably notice, this next year when you come through, it is definitely going to look like you're going to see the same ridge line as you saw before, but it won't be like completely barren. From what I've seen from pictures is it's just spots of brown is what you're going to see among the tree line there. Mm-hmm. So, but a lot of it is still green too. Less of it was destroyed than I thought was destroyed. Thank God. But it's not going to look like it did for probably a whole generation. It's just one of the things that takes a long time to rebuild, but
yeah,
you know, we'll just, next time I see a teenager with a smoke bomb, I'll shoot him. No. anyway, sorry. I have pretty strong opinions after what happened, as you can imagine.
It was this year you did WRC Mexico's, and I noticed you recently posted the question about what other WRC, if you were asking people what other WRC events should you compete in. I mean, what events are you thinking about competing in the near future?
In terms of WRC, there's Finland is pretty high on the list. The scheduling for that one isn't so great because it's the week after New England Forest Rally. But also Wales and Spain are two that are pretty high on the list, and they look like they could work out pretty well on the schedule too.
I lived in Wales for 2 years, so if you need any help with the pronunciation of the place names, I'm your man.
Okay, well, just all right, you'll be in the backseat during Recce and
Welsh names, my goodness. They don't pronounce anything like they look, not at all.
Yeah, as I say, I lived there for 2 years, and I went. Our family used to go there on vacation in the summer. In the summer for like 10-12 years. It was, for the first couple of years, it was actually quite amusing to try and pronounce all these double L's and double D's and the CH's that are in the words and stuff like that. But once I went to college there and hung around with a lot of Welsh people, I mean, it all kind of like became second nature in a way. So I don't laugh at it like you guys do.
So you've got a couple of rounds of WRC you'd like to do. You've got, Tri-State's going to be the first time we see the car. What are the specific plans, though, for 2018? Obviously, we'd love to see you back in ARA and see you over here at Oregon Trail. What other series? I'm not beholden to any specific series, to be honest.
Yeah.
Where else might we see you or others see you in this awesome R5 car?
Well, I certainly hope to compete in most, if not all, of the ARA rounds. I've really grown to love almost every single one of those rallies. Probably a couple of up in Canada, too. Rally Baie des Chaleurs is a fantastic rally. Amazing roads, great spectators, really well organized. And probably one other round up in Canada, too. By the end of this year, there will only be two that I haven't done up there, Tall Pines and Rocky Mountain. Tall Pines is, of course, over the American Thanksgiving, so I would probably get disowned if I tried to do that one. So it could be Rocky Mountain next year, but we'll see.
You know what? I got an offer to come up and help with media for Tall Pines, and I have the same problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, family would be
too
happy.
And I think it sounds like they're aware of the problem, and, I don't know. It sounds like some people up there are interested in moving the date a little bit so that they can get more U.S. competitors, but...
I think it's a tough challenge for them because on the other side of it, they think it's helping because most U.S. competitors have that time off already from work.
Yeah.
So for the people that don't have the ability to, that have to use holidays and whatnot to help compensate for all the other times during the summer they've used vacation time to maybe rally, it's easier for them. But for some of us that, it's one of the few times we actually get together with all of our families, it's a challenge. Yeah. So it's a tough balancing act for those guys. And I can see both sides of it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was going to switch gears and ask a little bit, couple of tougher questions. Cause the Blake Jack kind of question, right? If, we kind of brainstormed this a little bit between Ian and I, how could we make rallies more prominent in the U.S., more cars, more competitors, more sponsors, more media, closer competition, all those things. How have you ever thought about that kind of thing? And I know you kind of really focus on what you're doing, which is awesome stuff. And we love following up, as you move up into this awesome car. But have you thought about just like this different series as a whole and how we could make it better? Yeah. See, I told you it was a tough one.
Yes. Well, to begin with, I have been very impressed with the work that you and Matt have been doing this year. It's been great that my friends and family back home can get a closer look into what's going on when I'm at rallies, and even see a little bit of live streaming here and there. And so that's been a fantastic improvement. So thank you for that. I don't know, I don't know how the money of it all works, but the half hour show that the Canadian series puts together is pretty great. And I've been curious about what sort of effect that could have on the US series.
I'm all for it. Yeah, I think it'd be great if we had some sort of, even if it's, even if they don't get a TV station to back it, maybe just internet only to start with, kind of like Launch Control. But it'd be a whole series and not just, for the Subaru guys, right?
Right.
That would definitely be cool. I mean, you already have a crew here. Is there, it's the same guys that do Launch Control, the ones that do CRC's coverage. But they do have theirs on TV. And obviously the backing of a network is what brings the sponsors, which is always the challenge, right? To pay for the costs of that. So I'd love to see that.
The competitors to get sponsors too. I mean, without exposure, there's nothing in it for the sponsors, for the competitors. So,
right. Exactly.
It kind of helps everybody out.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you could add a little something you'd like to have us to have, like at least a short TV program to give us highlights from the events. All right. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm up for that. anything with how the rallies are run? Because Just your experience as a competitor, is there anything that you'd like to see change with how the rallies themselves are run? Especially you've done them under different organizations, different sanctioning bodies. Are those pretty consistent, or is there something you'd like to see more consistent between those that and how some of those are run? See, I've got the
Yeah.
tough ones lined up here for you, bud.
You know, I'm not sure there's anything specific that comes to mind. I'm sure if you asked my co-driver Leanne, she could go on for hours. But
She's the one that deals with all that paperwork anyway,
right. Yeah.
You just drive.
I'm just flat and turn the steering wheel.
Love it.
I'm feeling sorry for you, Dave. There,
Oh, sure, I'm
Mike's
sure.
making you really squirm on some of these questions. So I want to go back to something that you mentioned right at the very start, and I was so excited about the thought of the R5 that this just like passed over. But you said you had a Tesla.
Yes, I do.
So I mean, I don't. I've never met anybody who has a Tesla. I mean, I see quite a few around on the roads of Minnesota, but what's a Tesla like? What's it like to drive? What's the
Oh,
experience of having a
it
Tesla
is
like?
just it is the utopia you never thought you could have in a car. No, it's I really love driving it. It kind of it ticks all the boxes for me. It's really quick. I mean, it's 0 to 60 time is 2 point. I don't even know what it is now. They
Two
upgrade it
point
with
insanity,
software.
right?
Yes, exactly. It's high tech. The center console display is decades ahead of anything that Detroit's putting out. It's environmentally friendly, and it is just a blast to drive. The only downside is road trips with all the charging and stopping. Yeah, I am a huge believer in the future of electric cars. I often daydream about turning it into a rally car. But I think there are
Really?
some pretty significant challenges there.
Well,
Yeah.
you do know that there is in 20 that in Europe, a electric rally car has been logbooked,
Oh,
and
really?
will co yeah, there's it's going to be competing in the ER in a couple of ERC rounds at the end of this
Huh.
season, and they're hoping that by 2020 that the European or the British Junior Championship will be totally run with electric cars.
Oh wow. Well, I mean, the great thing about them is all the, I mean, instantaneous torque. So
And unlimited torque,
there's,
pretty much.
yeah,
Jeez.
yeah. So there are definitely some intriguing aspects there. The hurdle that, the big hurdle it seems to me is the battery capacity. I took my Tesla up to the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course here in Ohio, and I think 12 miles worth of lapping, I used up what the car said was about 120 miles worth of charge, which is about half the battery,
In
which would
12 laps?
mean, yeah, at 12 miles.
Or 12
So that would
miles? Oh
mean,
my.
yeah. So that would mean like some sort of fancy battery swapping system after every stage or something. And but that's, I mean, that's specific to the Tesla and not, that's, you know.
Right. This is one thing we've also talked about is that, hill climbs are perfect for electric cars.
Oh, yeah.
It's a known distance. It's, one shot you're up there. Obviously, the altitude thing doesn't affect electric motors like it does a car, even with a turbo, because you don't need the oxygen for the to get more boom. But one thing that we know though is that electric cars are quiet, and from a safety aspect, a lot of the I think almost all of the electric cars I've seen going up like Pikes Peak, they put sirens on the damn thing so people know they're coming. I
Yeah.
don't know if I'd want to see Rally become that.
Right. Yeah.
So,
Yeah, that's not
maybe
quite
we
as
could have
exciting to listen
speakers
to.
and put like F1 engine sounds or something better,
I
right? Actually,
think we
can't
need
you
to
with the
go.
Tesla make a different sound come out the speakers from like a pseudo engine? I thought I heard there was something you could do like that.
Oh, there might be, I'm sure there's like an app or something, but no, I haven't seen anything in the software, but that sounds like a great opportunity to get Seamus's escort,
V6
Mustang Power Escort, into a recording studio and record that and play that back every time you get an electric rally car.
I read a story this morning somewhere that Formula One were thinking of miking up the exhausts on the F1 cars for the TV coverage to give better sound for the television audience. So maybe if we can mic up rally cars in a stage atmosphere, and then have a couple of big speakers out the back of a electric rally car as it we're solving the problems as we go along.
Well, thank you, Dave, for taking this time to talk with us. So we're really excited about your future plans, the future car, hopefully on a boat on its way here. It's on a mother effing boat. is there anything you'd like to tell our listeners before we let you go?
Follow along with me with this great new adventure with the R5. You can follow along on Instagram at Savage Dave Rally or on Facebook at Savage Dave Rally. So yeah, come check it out.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you also, by the way, and I forgot to mention this earlier in the podcast, you gave us those awesome professional microphone flags that say ARA on them. So that elevated our professionalism quite a bit there. So thank you very much for those. That was really cool. But yeah, again, thanks, Dave Walling, for coming on the show. Again, as he said, you can follow Dave and his awesome Iron Lady co-driver, Leanne Janilla, and all the rally antics on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Savage Dave Rally. Thank you to all our listeners. Please leave us a comment. Tell us how we're doing. Rate us on iTunes. Give us a follow on Facebook. All that typical mumbo jumbo. You know how to do it. Thanks to my co-presenter, Ian Holmes. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Thanks again for listening. Have a good night.